What is up, Level Up Nation, and welcome to episode 124 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined by the one, the only, the man, the myth, and possibly the legend, Joey Courtside King. What's up, buddy?
Doing well, John. Things are good. It's a hard Monday for me today. I was not ready for the end of the weekend at all.
No, who is ready for the end of the weekend? You have to go back to work. You got to be an adult. And no one wants to adult. Adulting's hard.
It's really hard. It's definitely not easy coming off of weekend. And it was a short weekend for me. My Saturday was pretty booked all over. But we are back here. We went back to work and we are back to the podcast tonight.
Your Saturday, you had to work. I slept in till like 11 o'clock on Saturday. It was fantastic. Nation, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's at the Level Up Podcast. Thank you for leaving me hanging there, Joey. I appreciate it. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter, if you want to follow Joey, go for it. He's probably going to leave you hanging. That's at Courtside King. And while you're at it, give me a follow too. I won't leave you hanging. That's at Fiasco. If you're watching here live on Twitch, we welcome you to the Twitch stream. Those handles are below those beautiful mug shots you're staring at right now. And if you're listening on the podcast later on down the road, they will be in the show notes below. Nation, if there is one thing we knew about the city of brotherly love, is that they have stupid money. And if you didn't know that, Philly decided to flex on the Western esports world. A $50 million flex. Flexing is just one topic on this week's show, though, Joey. What else are we touching on this week on episode 124?
Well, John, outside of flexing, we are also talking some new car and automotive partnerships entering into esports, as well as some new snack foods as well. On top of that, we have a Call of Duty mobile game. We have new announcements from Google, Sony, and Apple, and a lot of big news coming out of esports from recent tournaments as well.
Joey, in all honesty, if you guys are listening to this podcast later on, Joey decided to flex live on stream. Joey, I'm pretty sure Twitch has a no gun policy on stream,
hello.
So I'm gonna need you to get those registered weapons under control there, sir.
Yeah, I'm sure that came across really well in this hoodie I'm wearing.
It looked fan freaking tastic. Much like our next segment that we have to jump right into, which is the drink of choice, because what is the Level Up Podcast without a cool, crisp beverage to wash it all down? Joey, for the 124th time, please, I need your beverage.
Well, John, my beverage is not cool. Actually, it's hot tea, but it is kind of crisp. I'm going with an Earl Grey tonight. Like I said, I was suffering. I had such a hard time staying awake today, so I need a little extra caffeine at the evening.
Joey, I'm going to pick up the slack here real quick. Let me just go ahead and open up this bottle of rum real quick. So if you're watching here live on stream, I'm going to try to do this.
Now, remember, one time he tried to do this, he did end up pouring it all over himself.
I did not pour
it all over. So stay tuned, viewers.
That is about two shots worth of rum there if you are listening on the podcast. That is two beautiful, glorious shots of Bacardi lemon rum going straight in to a Coke Zero. Joey, speaking of Coke Zero, I have that new Coke Zero vanilla orange. Don't think lemon Bacardi rum would go well with that, but I'm willing to try it off stream, though. I'll let you know how it is. It's okay. You can go ahead and leave me hanging there. Joey, let's waste no more time.
I don't know if that works like that. You can't make an announcement like that and just not try it for us.
Well, I would have to run back upstairs to grab the Coke Zero.
Okay. I'll let you off this time then.
Well, I do appreciate it. Joey, enough with our beverages. Enough with me carrying the show, if you know what I mean. Joey, it's time for gaming and esports news. Let's go.
John, just like that hoodie you're wearing, we are going to kick things off with Cloud9. They've announced their full Apex Legends roster. We have Frex, Grego, PvP, and I Am Chappie. John, one name in particular sticks out to me, and that is Grego. He has returned to Cloud9.
Yeah, we hit on it a couple weeks ago. Grego, one of the first people announced on this new Apex roster for Cloud9. If I can not try to fanboy, because I am a huge Grego fan, again, dating back to when he was originally with Cloud9 as a support player for their Overwatch team prior to OWL. So we're talking about a year and a half ago, roughly. Back with Cloud9, Grego, massive, massive player, absolutely fantastic. Watched a lot of his streams so far. He's teamed up with a lot of his teammates on stream, practicing and doing this weird. So they have a Discord that all the pros are in, and they all try to queue at the same time so they can try to get in games together. Don't know if it really works or not. I guess there's a higher percentage chance if they all do it at the same time. But it's really cool just to hear their communication and their strategy and really try to implement, you know, yourself when you try to play. So it's really cool when you watch these pro streamers. But honestly, Grego is a beast of his own, absolutely fantastic, and very fan-friendly, too. So make sure you stop by his stream. That is an unofficial sponsorship from Fiasco to Grego. So there you go.
And I also feel like the name I Am Chappie also fits so well with this game. Like, the fact that we have a champion that practically looks just like Chappie, I think that works very well. So overall, Cloud9 here signing some big names for Apex, and they're just another big organization jumping into the game. It looks like John has lost his drink meantime here.
I didn't lose my drink. I needed to pick up my stirring straw, so all the rum is not at the top of the drink. I didn't lose anything. You wish I lost my drink again. That would be quality content.
Well, I got a little confused there because last time you were looking around after pouring a drink, it ended up with you standing in it for half the show. Or sitting in it, I guess.
It was with me sitting in it for half of the show. And that was a beautiful margarita I was sitting in. And Joey, I really don't like you bringing that back up like 20 episodes later. That's very offensive.
Yeah, unfortunately, guys, that was before we started clipping this show, because that was a perfect clip and a great upload to YouTube if we would have had it. Okay, going back to roster moves, we have Complexity Gaming adding Sick as their fifth and final member of the CS squad as well. So CSGO, a game always been around. Complexity, one of those teams that continues to try to push toward the top. They haven't quite made it up there yet. Sick is a good addition, though. I think he's going to help round out this squad. And at Complexity, as they continue to invest more and more in esports, I think CSGO is a good game for them. They seem to do pretty well in shooters, and I like to see them continuing to invest in titles to hope to grow up toward the top. Well, then, let's head on over to partnerships. Once you pop, you can't stop. That's what Pringles says, and they are going with that motto as they've nearly doubled their investment in esports. They began working with ESL in late 2017, sponsoring ESL 1 Hamburg, and then from there they went on to sponsor two events the following year. Now, John, they're committing to seven ESL events, tournaments across 13 European countries from Sweden to Romania.
You just had to throw that slogan in there, didn't you?
I did. I looked it up right before the show, actually.
You didn't know that?
No, I actually do not. I don't really see many commercials, to be completely honest. I don't really watch TV, so it's kind of whatever Twitch throws at me.
Yeah, but like, Pringles has been around since like...
Okay, confession. Forever. I also don't really enjoy Pringles.
What?
Yeah.
What? You don't like Pringles? Okay, so Joey, I'm not gonna give you crap for that. I will go ahead and I will admit something that I don't like that is quite popular amongst the peoples. I don't like combos.
I don't either.
Yeah, I thought combos are absolute trash. So, yeah, but Pringles are by far one of the best kind of chip out there, and I will fight you over that.
Okay, really? Like, Pringles is in your top three chips?
Well, style of chip. I mean, they have different flavors out there, but yeah, I would take a Pringle over a Lay potato chip any day of the week.
Okay. I mean, I guess I'll give you that. I guess I'm just not a big Pringles guy. Like, I would almost always go for, like, the pretzels over the Pringles. Pretzel guy.
Pretzel's a different kind of
it is. It's very different. I also like Tostito chips more. Like, because then you can throw some salsa. You can throw some queso. Mix it up a little bit here and there. I kind of like that head thing I just did. we are way off topic. See, this is what happens when you don't sleep very much before a show. Anything else you want to say on Pringles, though, John? I really like the fact they're continuing to introduce new events, and I really like the fact we're seeing it in Europe as well. Europe is one of those places that's kind of up on the rise as far as esports go. We've seen a lot of movement over there, especially in Germany, but now you're going to see it in so many more countries. Sweden already has a pretty good CSGO team, really player scene. Romania, though, you don't hear as much about.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for Pringles to jump into it. I mean, again, Pringles is a brand name that is almost universal. I'm not going to say it's up there like with other names like Coca-Cola, which really is universal. But Pringles is pretty close. I would say like a high B-tier product when it comes to worldwide, you know, ability to recognize it. So it's cool that Pringles is jumping into. We see a lot of snacky foods jump into sponsorships of esport events, mainly because that's kind of one thing that goes hand in hand. It's like you can snack while you're gaming, but you can't eat a full meal. Sorry, Olive Garden. Your chicken parmesan is not going to sponsor anything because you have to use two hands to eat it. And if you use one hand, you're a monster. So, yeah, you know, I like it. It's a good move by Pringles, and yeah, it's great for esports.
Wow, and that's pasta etiquette here on the Level Up
podcast. Oh, no.
Wait, I don't even get why we're doing that.
Because you said pasta etiquette.
Wait, what's wrong with pasta etiquette?
It's a pun, Joey. I can't take your puns.
Oh, I don't even think that is a pun.
I feel like it but, is.
So, yeah, I think overall it's very good. Like you said, Pringles is a very recognizable brand. And the fact that we are seeing it jump into more countries is just going to help the scene grow as well. So I think this is the first of many that we're going to see jump over in Europe. We really haven't seen that many. Like Mike and Ike, I believe, bought into Overwatch League. I think we've seen a few other snacks here and there. But really, European snacks haven't really bought in. But now Pringles is starting to take a hold of that market. And I think as they continue to expand over there, we're going to see more and more of these European-style brands even start to buy in. Because I don't know if Pringles is necessarily a European brand. I think it's just capitalizing on the market.
I mean, they might be known as something different in Europe. I'm not 100% sure.
Pringles.
Are you Googling right now?
Yeah, introduced 1967 in America, 1991 in Great Britain. So they are American, so they're just capitalizing on the European market. But I'm just curious if we ever see something like maybe a Belgian chocolate maker, for example, start to buy into the European scene. Because as far as I know, we haven't really gotten any of that. Now, I'm just going off of LEC, I'm going off of CSGO competitions. But to my knowledge, I don't remember any like purely European foods really buying in yet.
Yeah, I can't think of any either.
Even in Germany, like I can't think of any German. I think beers have, like alcohol companies. Yeah, nothing. Well, rip. I don't know. A kielbasa sponsoring a tournament. Anyway, Nissan, they have entered esports with Optic Gaming and FaZe Clan partnership as well. So Nissan will act as a jersey sponsor for both of its new partners, and the team members from both organizations will have access to Nissan vehicles for content. This to me sounds very similar to what Fnatic is doing with Kia, plus the jersey sponsorship as well. So Fnatic and Kia, I want to say it's 4 or 5 videos they've done together and released every like 2 weeks throughout the LEC split. And I think this is going to be very similar here coming out from Nissan. I think it's a great move. Nissan a little late to the party as a few others have bought in, but joining here with Optic and FaZe is a good move. Optic in particular seems to do very well when it comes to, I would say, Call of Duty and Gears of War. They're kind of mediocre when it comes to Overwatch League, when it comes to League of Legends. FaZe Clan on the other side is very, very good when it comes to CSGO. So I think FaZe Clan is a winning partnership here. And Optic, if you look at the console gaming scene, does very well too.
Nissan, when all the other good card makers are already taken. So interesting move here. Nissan sponsoring Optic. Optic is still up for sale. There is no owner. Like, I mean, I if I was Nissan, I'm not 100% sure I would want to make some kind of marketing deal or sponsorship with Optic, fully, you know, fully well not knowing the future of that organization with it being up for sale. So there's still a lot of question marks around it. I guess kudos for Optic for actually getting the deal done. Hopefully that will help with the sale of the group a little bit faster. But I find that interesting, Optic teaming up here with Nissan.
Yeah, and more or less Nissan teaming up with Optic, I feel like. Because FaZe is pretty safe. Optic Gaming, on the other hand, they have had some bad headlines over the year. I feel like they had the one in, what was it, India, where they had the one team where their star player was cheating and kind of like scripting in-game. That's definitely not a good one to partner up with.
And fought the referee while doing it, too.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I didn't put the flash drive in. It just appeared there. Sure, because it was a Pikachu in the brush. Like, seriously, so they've had some bad publicity, and like you said, they're up for sale, so it is a bit of a question mark, but I do feel like FaZe Clan is kind of the anchor in this partnership. FaZe Clan, you know, is going to be consistent, and even Optic, when you move forward, they've always been there in Call of Duty, it feels like. They've always been there in Gears of War. So if you look at certain shooter games, at least in that console side market, they've always been pretty popular. They don't really quite do it as well in CSGO and League of Legends, Overwatch League. They're always around there, but they feel more mid-tier to me.
Yeah, and really just the partnership with FaZe Clan, it just, even if it was just on a social media level, FaZe Clan has such a massive social media following. You know, if FaZe Clan was to make this partnership with, you know, Nissan and add any other esport organization of choice, for Nissan, it's still worth it just because of FaZe Clan. They have such a following, such a social media presence. Huge, huge deal for Nissan and FaZe Clan. Just Optic kind of feels like the awkward third wheel here with kind of everything up in the air.
Most definitely. Into our other news section, we have Call of Duty announcing a mobile title and teasing their Blackout Battle Royale mode to be included in it. John, what are your thoughts on shooters on mobile? I know you and I both have our differences of opinions as far as mobile games go. I like certain ones. You don't feel very strong, or you feel very strongly about not liking certain ones. But overall, do you see a shooter like Call of Duty doing well? We've seen a lot of success from something that's third person like Fortnite. Do you see a first person game really making it on the mobile market at all?
Maybe. See, here's my thing is the idea of mobile gaming and trying to take traditional console and PC games and trying to fit it on a mobile platform, to me, feels like it doesn't do the game a good service. It's you're watering the game down. You're using a virtual joystick and buttons on the screen. You're not using a controller. Some platforms may allow you to have a Bluetooth controller that you can use, but it's still not the same. It's very weird. It's different. And the whole idea of having a mobile game is to be able to play it on your mobile device without any additional equipment. So getting a controller for it kind of defeats the purpose. It makes it not that mobile. So when you put a shooter on here, and it's the same issue I had with Fortnite, you know, even though it is third person mode, it's still wonky to control on the screen. And you think, you know, well, hey, you know, maybe it's hard to play on the iPhone or an Android or whatever. Let's play it on my tablet. It's even weirder when you play it on a tablet. To me, it's if you're going to make a mobile game, make it a mobile game. Make it a true mobile game. You know, play with some things here and there, but don't try to take a game that was clearly intended for the PC or a console and try to squeeze it into a cell phone and expect people that play it on a PC or a console to be incredibly well accepting of it on its modified version, you know, on the phone. And, you know, and that's what it is. It's a modified, scaled back version. It's not like, you know, when you watch a movie on your computer and on the phone, it's scaled down to your device. You're still streaming it at a high quality. You can still see it in 4K. You can still see it in high def, you know, depending upon your equipment. But here, it's a completely scaled down, simplistic version of the game. And that's what really bothers me is that it really, this game wasn't meant for the mobile market. And they're trying to force it in hoping that it is. It's not going to win me over. If I'm going to play it, I'm going to play it on the PC. I'm going to play it on the console. I don't even think I'm going to touch this on mobile.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm not touching this one either. Hey, the concept's interesting, but I feel like if you're going to go this direction, you might as well go Nintendo Switch over a mobile platform. At least you have the Joy-Cons there already. But the other thing that confuses me with this move, John, and to me it feels like a complete money grab, is you look at Microsoft. They're about to announce xCloud, which is going to be a streaming service from Xbox and PC. So if I can stream to my mobile device from the Xbox or from the PC and just attach a controller to it, why not do that over that? Because then it's running on your other hardware. It's running on the Xbox. It's running on the PC. And it's almost just resized on a different screen. Like, to me, that seems like a better option here if you really feel the need to play on a mobile device.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I believe we're talking about this before we went live here for the show. But this game is already out in certain parts of Asia. I think it's just China, correct?
Yeah, I believe it's already out in China.
Yeah, and it's doing incredibly well in China. But, you know, mobile game, like gaming in general, whether it's mobile, console or PC or whatever, gaming over there always does well. I just don't see it doing well, you know, in North America, in the Western Hemisphere, where mobile gaming is still second fiddle to almost every other form. You know, I would rather play, like you said, on the Nintendo Switch. I'd rather play on my old school Game Boy Color. Or, you know, my Game Boy Advance or my Game Boy DS or whatever. I'd rather play on something that is designed to be on a mobile platform from the get-go and have a better experience versus having a first-person shooter that was clearly made for different platforms squeezed into a computer. Into a phone. See, it doesn't even make sense. I can't even talk right about it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and it sounds like both of us will not be downloading this.
Nope, not touching it.
Okay, perfect. Then
Sorry,
let's
Activision.
Move on to our next topic. Lucasfilms Games has been resurrected by Disney. So overall, we don't know too much about this, John. It's kind of a rumor at this point. I believe they reenacted the trademark, if I remember correctly. At the same point, I kind of want to speculate on this a bit. This, to me, is kind of what we're seeing with Disney moving away from Netflix. With them moving away from Netflix, they're creating their own streaming platform. This, to me, is their idea of doing that for the gaming side. They're saying, hey, instead of giving EA permission to do our Star Wars games, instead of selling them out to all these other studios to develop them, we're going to do all the Star Wars developing in-house and then sell it from our own look. So, to me, this is Disney capitalizing on the gaming market, bringing it back home, very similar to what we're seeing with their videos as well.
What I'm scared about is how Disney is going to manage this. Lucasfilm Games, prior to the Disney acquisition of the rights for Star Wars and Lucasfilm and all that other fun stuff, was great. And the games they put out were fantastic. Then Disney acquired everything, and then Lucasfilm Games, you know, gaming studio, kind of shut down. And Disney just kind of took over everything. And while, you know, some people are not a fan of the new Star Wars content that came out, that's been coming out, other people are. People like the new direction they're taking things, trying to expand in the story, how they're doing it. Same thing with the games. I guess I'm kind of hesitant here, because I like the idea of having Lucasfilm Games be resurrected here. But at the same time, what made Lucas Games awesome was the fact that, you know, they had that connection with the original creator of Star Wars. They understood the canon. They understood what's going on with Star Wars. Right now, everything's just kind of up in the air. And really, to me, that signals that Disney's really still going to be in charge of this. And you might alienate some Star Wars gaming fans because of it. You know, you can slap the Lucasfilms game title on it, but fans may buy it, they may play it, they may delete it, and they may demand a refund. But it's concerning, because Disney, it's kind of up in the air to see what Disney's really going to do. What kind of control are they going to have over this studio? Is it going to be something like we see what Microsoft is doing? We have a bunch of initiatives. We have a bunch of studios coming under the branch. They can do their own thing. They can be, you know, as creative as they want, but they fall under the Microsoft brand. Or is this going to be a case of like Microsoft creating the initiative where, you know, that's the one studio they're going to hard focus on? I like the idea, but I'm going to sit back and wait to see how this develops.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. I think it's going to happen more and more as we move forward with esports and gaming, as they continue to grow. Disney, obviously, seeing how well it's doing. ESPN is buying more into it. They're actually putting games up on Disney XD. Is that what it's called nowadays? The Disney Channel, whatever it is now?
Extreme Disney.
Is that really what it stands for?
I have no idea.
Oh, gosh. I like how you probably bought that, does. I would believe it. They would do something like that. But overall, I do see this as a good move for Disney. I hope they end up doing some contracting work with other studios, though. So they can be the home base studio here with Lucasfilm Games. But at the same point, I hope they do contract out. I hope they do look for at least opinions and try to get some work from these other well-developed studios as well. If the studio has been down for this long, unless they're going to pull in really big talent, I am a bit concerned about the quality of the game. Now, they've done great games before. There's been some very, very good Star Wars games done, especially from this studio. So I'm curious to see what they end up putting together. But again, since this has been down, a lot of people have moved on. A lot of people now have different jobs. So I'm curious to see what kind of talent they bring in as well as the game's being developed.
And for all your Disney fans out there, XD stands for Extreme Digital.
Oh, so you were close.
Sounds close.
Pretty darn close.
Extremely dangerous.
That's Disney Channel for you. Sony, they have announced a new State of Play initiative. So, John, to me, I did not get a chance to watch this. I believe it ended up a little earlier in the day. You can check that for me. But to me, it sounds like Nintendo's Directs. Just like a Nintendo Direct, it's a short announcement coming from Sony. This is the new software coming out to PlayStation 4 and to PSVR. I do kind of like this move overall, but I'm wondering, do you feel like this is a move to further engage with their audience, or more of something to kind of correct because they've been losing audiences down the road here in 2019?
I think it's the latter. I think they're trying to correct some things here down the road. And I will have to admit also, I wasn't able to watch the announcement. It did air 5 p.m. Eastern time, also known as rush hour time for those of us here in the Washington, D.C. area, which means my 11-mile trip took approximately 47 minutes to get home. So I was unable to stream and drive, as that is highly illegal, and I would do no such thing in my automobile while driving down 95. So I was unable to watch it, but I will be doing more research after the show, actually, to figure out what Sony was announcing here. I do think that this is an attempt to kind of save face after all the negative publicity here. Is it going to be enough? You know, you could argue, you know, did Sony recover from their 2-month PlayStation Network fiasco several years ago? Did they ever really recover from that? Can they recover from this PR nightmare that they're really having by pulling out of everything and just kind of acting like they're the elitist company that they think they are, when Microsoft is over here slapping them around? So it's going to be interesting. And I do agree, it does sound like Nintendo Directs here a little bit. So I'll be interested to see how this plays out, and I will have to do more research to get a better opinion other than that.
Okay, well, I will let you know what happened in this one. So it was mainly focused on PlayStation VR. It looks like they ended up announcing an Iron Man VR game as well as No Man's Sky Beyond coming to VR later this summer.
Oh, boy.
And then on top of that, we ended up getting a firm release date for Days Gone. That is going to be April 26, 2019.
Are you telling me No Man's Sky is coming to virtual reality?
That's what they're saying.
Is it going to be as bad as the PC version?
So, okay, it came out really bad, but from what I've heard, and again, I've never bought this game, never played this game, but I have heard it got really good after, I think it was a year later update. Like, it was almost a year after release, they did, like, this huge update, and it got much better.
So you're telling me they should have kept the game under production for another year instead of releasing a 40% done game and make the entire community rant on the internet, because that's what we love to do on the internet, let's be real here. Rant on the internet for a full 12 months before you send a patch out and kind of correct the game. Where are we at now? Like 80% playable for No Man's Sky now, and now we have a VR version of it. Look, I will not rant about developers shipping out half finished products anymore, but that to me still does not make me excited for Sony.
No, not at all. And with No Man's Sky, don't quote me on this. I think it was a year. It could have been 6 months. But yeah, either way, it was shipped incomplete. And we still see it happening today. I mean, look at Anthem. A lot of people are complaining about all the bugs that came out with Anthem's release and how there's still so much content that needs to be added to the endgame. You and I both have enjoyed playing Anthem, but we're also not at that endgame where people are complaining yet. So I'm curious to see how all these games continue to go and if we continue to see undeveloped games. Because I like the idea of a day one patch. I don't like the idea of 6 months of patches to get a game to where it should be per launch.
Yeah.
So we'll wait and see on that one. But on top of Sony with their new debut today with the State of Play, we also have Google announcing its new gaming platform this past week, Stadia. And it is claiming that it'll be more powerful than the PS4 Pro and Xbox One X combined. That is insane to me for a streaming device.
That's a ballsy proposition there, Google. Considering Google really hasn't done anything in the gaming market, that's a tall order you just put up there. I mean, you just put Sony and Microsoft on blast, and you don't have a track record here. You have what, the Razer gaming phone, because it's a Droid-based phone. That's really all you have. Show of hands here. How many people have actually seen the Razer gaming phone anywhere? Anyone? I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4. Zero hands are raised. So I'm not too sold on this idea of this new gaming platform. I think it does sound interesting. I'll watch it, but I don't know. That it's ballsy for Google to come out shooting for the big dogs right off the bat when they really haven't done anything.
Yeah, I feel like Google is a company that has the ability to do this, but at the same point, like, we're talking like a very small device here, trying to be more powerful than the Xbox One X and the PS4 Pro. I mean, the PS4 Pro was very strong when it first came out. The Xbox One X is the strongest console we've ever seen. And now Google coming out and saying it's going to be more powerful than both combined, that's a little fishy to me. Not only that, but the fact that we are probably also going to get new announcements for a new PlayStation and a new Xbox coming out probably next year or the following year. So with those announcements coming up, John, I'm also slightly concerned for Google because they're talking all this big game, but now if we see the new Xbox and the new PlayStation come out and absolutely dominate this new Google product, they're kind of sitting in the water then.
We'll have to see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. But on top of that, so John, the biggest thing for me with this being a streaming-based device, they're talking that there's going to be barely any input lag. If you're asking me, I feel like we are asking for a ton of input lag here, because if you're going to be that powerful and you're going to be able to run these AAA games like an Assassin's Creed Odyssey, like they say, that to me shows there's got to be some kind of lag there, whether it be input lag, whether it be stream lag. I can't see that running flawlessly.
I mean, there are so many things out of the control of Google on this platform that could introduce lag. Like not having a good internet connection. What was it going to do? Just dumb the game down when it transmits it over the cloud to whatever streaming service you're using? It's an interesting theory. It's not practical. And until it's done, I'm sorry, there's going to be lag. There's no way there isn't going to be. I haven't seen one cloud-based game that is streamed directly from a cloud not have lag. of some sort, of any sort. It's ballsy proposition, sir.
Yeah, like maybe if you have Google Fiber and you're running like 1,000 megabytes per second or whatever, maybe. But I mean, or that's even a lot higher than that, excuse me. But what I'm saying is, unless you have a premium internet connection, it's just going to be incredibly hard to do this. Like, to me, if you're just a normal person with a normal internet speed connection, like even you and I have pretty boosted internet speed. But if I'm just a casual living in DC, living in Baltimore, or wherever I end up living, like, how is this going to be something you can easily stream at that rate? It just, it doesn't seem like something that's going to be available for everyone. I feel it's like going to have a premium price tag on the internet already.
I love the fact you just referred to people in DC as casuals, considering how expensive it is to live in DC.
I'm a casual.
I thought you were calling people in DC a casual. I was like,
No.
I'm a casual because I can't afford to live in DC. No. Now here's something that popped into my mind. You know, Google has announced they're trying to roll out Google Fiber, some of the fastest internet in the world. Granted, it's only available in like.
It's like 7 cities or something, or 10 cities, isn't it?
If it's 7, I know it's some ridiculously small number that is completely irrelevant whatsoever. But if Google Fiber could actually take off, this would probably be a good way to either bundle or kind of, you know, say, well, hey, look, if you really want to play these AAA games for a subscription fee on great internet without having to take up a bunch of hard drive space or solid state space, get Google Fiber. And, you know, who doesn't love fast internet?
I mean, okay, so there are 11 fiber cities.
11 fiber
in the country.
Is DC one of them?
It is not. There is none near here. The closest is North Carolina.
North Carolina. What's in North Carolina? Nothing. It's a
Carolina. Charlotte would be my guess. Maybe Charlotte or Raleigh. Is one of them.
I'm gonna say Raleigh.
And the other one is Triangle. So it's Charlotte and Triangle.
I don't know where Triangle, North Carolina is.
Well, Charlotte's a big one. I mean, Charlotte's in the top three up-and-coming cities in the country, so that one doesn't really surprise me. Kansas City has it. We also have, what is this one here?
Question.
Atlanta, maybe? Yeah, Atlanta.
Is that yes. Kansas City, Kansas, or Kansas City, Missouri?
Oh, see, it is right on the border. Let's take a look here. Unknown. It is in Kansas City. You can be the judge. What else we got here? We have Huntsville.
Alabama?
Yeah, that would not have been on my top
what?
Ones. Nashville makes sense. That's another top three up and coming. We have San Antonio.
Okay.
We have Austin. Go figure. That's a good one. We got three more here. Salt Lake City. And Provo, Utah. What is in Provo, Utah? And last but not least is Orange County. That one makes sense.
And let's be real here. I forgot Utah was even a state. So really, like, I don't understand some of these cities. Like, why in the world are, like, is it just because it's cheap to install fiber there and like, you don't have to tear up an entire, you know, metropolis to install your Google Fiber here, like in the Northern Virginia, like in the DMV, the DC, Maryland, and Virginia area? I mean, that's where you really want to be pushing this kind of stuff. I mean, Huntsville, Alabama, Joey, the only thing in Huntsville is Space Camp, and I know because I went. Space Camp is the only thing in Huntsville, Alabama. There's nothing else there. And Utah? What does the lake need to like have Google Fiber to Google how to be a salt lake or something? It just doesn't make sense. Why?
Oh, they went to Huntsville for this tagline. Get home internet service that is fast enough for Rocket City. Must be why they ended up there.
Joey, they hired you for that one. There's no way you can convince me otherwise.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know how they choose these cities. I'm kind of stunned at the fact we do not have New York on there. We do not have Philadelphia or Pittsburgh on there. We don't have Boston on there. No DC on there. So yeah, it's feels very sporadic the way they chose some of these, to be completely honest. Even LA is not on there as a full fiber city.
There you go.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, thank you, Google. So Stadia overall, is this something, I don't think we even have a price point on this, but is this something you would see yourself buying? Is this something you need more information on? Do you really see this competing with Sony and Microsoft at all?
I don't see it competing. As of right now, I'm not interested at all. I think the idea, while I think it is unique and I think it is great that they're thinking outside of the box, I don't see this living up to what they're saying it's going to be. There is no way a cloud-based system is not going to have any kind of lag. I just don't see how lag, latency, whatever you want to call it, any kind of delay to anything is not going to be there. And look, I'm sorry. At the end of the day, you know, I guess people in Utah will have it.
One of the comments that was cracking me up before their presentation, so they started like 2 minutes late, and a ton of people on like Twitter, on Reddit, were all making comments about their input lag being about 2 minutes, and they were demonstrating that with their presentation.
That is outstanding.
It was great. It made me laugh. Okay, so on top of this, John, we also have Apple Arcade being announced today in the Apple, was it Apple Showcase, I guess you call it? So you did get a chance to watch this, and it looks like it's going to be a game subscription for iOS, Mac, and Apple TV. What are your thoughts here on Apple Arcade?
So they didn't really go too far into it. There's not even a price point or anything. There's no release date. So if you know anything about Apple, if they don't give you a date, it's probably not going to happen for at least a year is what it really feels like. The idea behind it I like, because just as I just was talking about how first-person shooters are not a mobile game, this Apple Arcade is designed for mobile game storytellers. And that was probably one of the bigger themes of this Apple event, was storytelling, the ability to tell a story through different mediums, whether it's you know, magazines and news articles, whether it's, you know, Apple TV Plus, or you know, if it's Apple Arcade. So they're reaching out to these mobile game developers, some of the biggest in the industry, saying, "Hey, look, we're gonna open up this idea, this thing called Apple Arcade, where the users are gonna pay X amount of money per month." That X being unknown as of at this moment, and being able to have these high quality games at one set flat rate versus paying, you know, $6.99, $8.99, $11.99 for these high tier mobile games that are incredibly good. There's not going to be any ads. There's not going to be, you know, any kind of like from their examples, it didn't seem like there's anything that was like pay to win or anything like that. So I like the idea, the examples they gave out there, their ability to have high graphics but have that fun mobile gaming experience. That has a better chance of me buying into it than a first-person shooter that was meant for a different platform trying to be squeezed into a cell phone. The one thing I really do like about Apple Arcade is right now, like, you can play games on Apple TV. Obviously, you can play games on your phone as well, your iPhone. Having it come to the Mac is huge. Absolutely huge. And the ability to play on your phone, pause the game, pick it up on your tablet, pause the game, pick it up on your TV, pause the game, and then pick it up on your computer later on also. So the ability to just move around, kind of like how, you know, TV subscribers tell you, know, hey, look, you can start your show in one room and finish it in the other. Same thing here. You can start your game on one device, end it on another device if needed. That I really do like. I really wish they went a little more in depth into what the arcade is going to offer. But so far, the little bit they have given us sounds incredibly awesome. So I'll be keeping an eye on it going on into the future when it finally is announced. And I'll probably buy it and dabble with it just a little bit.
I'm not impressed at all. I think it's not going to do that well. So for me, I have an iPhone. I've had an iPad before as well. And I feel like this could be somewhat beneficial in that sense. But at the same point, I don't know if I see myself doing a mobile gaming subscription or mobile style games. Like, if I want to buy a mobile game, I'm just going to buy that one game. Do I need to play seven different mobile games at once? I don't feel like I'm going to be playing that many. Overall, if I'm jumping into a mobile game, it's going to be one or two at a time. And I'll last for a few months or so playing them, and then I'll move on. But again, most of those are going to be free. Maybe one or two I pay money for up front, like $2. But do I really want to pay $3.99 or $5.99 or whatever this ends up being monthly to play this service? Personally, I don't think I do, especially with the Mac PC aspect being there as well. If I'm going to play on a computer, I'm going to play on Windows. Windows has such a bigger store variety. It has so many more opportunities. The graphics cards sync much better. So overall, I don't see this being beneficial for PC. I feel like this is mainly mobile devices. And to me, I just don't know if that warrants a subscription service. This to me is them saying, hey, Apple Music did really well. Now let's try it for games. I don't think it translates as well. Anything else on that?
No. Yeah, you have the right to your opinion, no matter how wrong it is.
You kind of agree with me. I know it.
I do. I mean, I said it before. I'm not a big mobile gamer, but the games that do keep my attention are ones that have a great storyline. So if these mobile games, if they look good, like they can be abstract, they can be artistic as much as they want. But if there's no story, if there's nothing that can draw my attention to it, like puzzle games, okay, cool, awesome. Words with Friends, okay, whatever. Candy Crush. I don't care about that stuff. Give me a game that has substance to it. Generally, you have to go to a console or a PC to find a game with substance. You don't go to a mobile platform for that. So if they have these developers pumping out titles that have substance in it, that have a storyline that can connect with you, that's how you're going to win people over with this. But if you're going to be paying, hypothetically speaking, $9.99 a month for mobile games and all you get is Candy Crush with 50 tokens or whatever, see, I don't even know how to, know what the game is. It's not worth it. So it is for a very niche market, but I see where you're coming from. I'm willing to give them a shot in this case versus in the other sense that we talked earlier on in the show of taking a computer game and a console game and trying to stuff it into an iPhone. That way doesn't make sense, but this way that Apple's doing it, I think, is somewhat logical. But it's probably a 60-40, not going to be popular, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think maybe even less. It might be 30-70 for me. By the way, we are freezing. The video keeps freezing up, and I'm trying to screenshot all the faces you're making, and I'm not able to do it quick enough. But you've made some brilliant ones, trust me.
I appreciate it.
I hope the chat has got to see some of these, but they probably just see me freezing. Anyway, so the only other thing to say here for me is the same thing I said with Google. I think with Project X Cloud coming out from Microsoft, that's going to be another huge competitor for them. Not just because it's Microsoft, not just because we have Sony as well, but the fact that we are seeing another streaming service that's pick up and play anywhere as well. So with X Cloud, if least of all the rumors are true, you can play it on your Xbox, you can play it on your phone, you can play it on your tablet, you can play it on your PC. Same thing, pause and move over, all of that same accessibility that it sounds like Apple is putting in here. So if that comes out to me, you're not only looking at mobile games, but you can play anything as strong as a console game or a PC game on your mobile devices through cloud. Again, I think that goes back to Google because we could see input lag coming in as a factor as well. But overall, that to me sounds more impressive. I think I would be more willing to put money towards something like that, especially after seeing the success of Game Pass, as opposed to buying into mobile games that I only have so much time for. Well, no problem at all there. Let's head over to the PC. In the wake of new competitors rising up, like we just talked about here with Apple and Google, we also have the Epic Store putting a lot of pressure, as well as Discord, onto Valve. So Valve has revealed plans for a complete Steam overhaul, including a rework for the library, a brand new event system, and more. So John, I did put the link in our notes here if you want to go ahead and pull that up.
Oh, I've already been looking at it.
Okay, it looks interesting to me. What are your thoughts overall? I kind of like the new library look.
I do like the new look. You can definitely see Epic's what word do I want to use?
Influence.
Influence. Yeah, you can see Epic's influence here. It's clean. It's not plain boring with very simple like 1999 dividers put in everywhere. So it is a much needed facelift. I don't think that's going to be enough alone just to defeat Epic or anything, but I think it's a step in the right direction. I feel like they're going to need to overhaul the idea behind Steam. They're going to need to change the breakdown between what Valve gets, what the developer gets, and if there's a third party that's in there that gets a cut, they're going to need to renegotiate all that stuff. Because that's really the biggest thing that is going to hurt Steam here is the fact that you can go to Epic, and I believe it's an 80-20 split. Or something incredible like that, that is absolutely in favor of the developer versus Steam, I believe, is what, like 67-33 or something like that in favor of the developer. So at the end of the day, it's more advantageous for a developer to put their game on Epic. They get more money for it, but Steam being the legendary platform that it is, it has all the games on it already and already has the audience. That's kind of the gamble that developers are going to have to take. And we're starting to see Steam start to make these changes because it looks like that gamble by Epic is starting to pay off, that, Steam has finally come around. Valve's sitting here going like, hey, look, we need to start making some changes to Steam. Otherwise we're going to lose everything. So it's nice to see these changes start to come in for Steam.
I think Valve takes in 30% is what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, right around 25 to 30, depending on how much the game ends up selling, it looks like. But yeah, overall, I think you hit the nail on the head, John. I think it comes down to that split. That's really going to be the thing that changes it, not a library overhaul. But they are adding an events page in, and I think this is a game changer as well. Maybe not a 10% game changer, but I do think this makes it more attractive for developers. So this new events page will allow Valve and the developers within Steam's program library, I guess you could say, or game library, they'll be able to have sections for their major and minor events. This, to me, is big, especially for smaller games. So if you look at something like, let's say, Brawlhalla, for example, if they want to have a developer competition with players, this is the perfect place to advertise that. If you're Fortnite, you already have so many different channels to advertise. But like I said, like a Brawlhalla, something smaller like that, that's more indie-based, they need something like this to develop to advertise better. Tournaments on Smash.gg, on Battlefy, and all these different platforms are not going to bring in enough advertising. But if you're on a huge, like a main page of Steam for their events, that could be huge. That could end up with so many more downloads for something like a Brawlhalla for these indie games. And that, to me, makes it very attractive for developers. At the same point, it's probably just as easy for Epic to add something like this as well.
Oh, for sure. And Epic doesn't sit around. We saw how fast they made changes to Fortnite once Apex Legends came out. It was like within a week, a pinging system was already placed into Fortnite, and now they have respawns and all this other fun stuff. So Epic doesn't sit around to wait. When their competitors make changes, Epic is there to implement either the same thing or come up with something better. In the end of the day, it's good. Both companies are driving each other to become better versions of themselves. So at the end of the day, it's a win for gamers. So I'm excited for that. But I think it is a much needed overhaul for Steam. So I'm excited to see that. And I agree with you. I think the featured spot is incredibly good for those indie games. And I think Brawlhalla is a great example that you brought up, Joey.
With that, let's head on to one of our biggest news topics of the day. We have Comcast looking to spend $50 million in South Philly. Comcast, the owner of the Philadelphia Fusion, making the nation's first video game arena is what they're saying here. So Comcast Spectacore, which owns the Flyers, is set to announce that they will be constructing the first arena for fans again in South Philly. $50 million project. It's going to end up in a 3,500-seat arena with a rise on a parking lot level next to Xfinity Live. So this will be right next to Citizens Bank Park, the Wells Fargo Center, where a lot of the other big major sports in Philadelphia are played. It's going to be, yep, part of that whole complex. So overall, I like the fact that they're almost putting on an equal level with sports. Again, the venue not as big as some of these other sporting venues, but the fact they're putting it right next to these other venues kind of shows where they are and where the city of Philadelphia is with esports. They're ready to bring it in. They're ready to put it into the heart of their city. And the Philadelphia Fusion getting a huge stadium here from Comcast.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see here. So one, I'm happy to see that it's going to be on a raised platform, so you're not going to be losing parking. Which, Joey, I know you've been there. I've been there also. That sporting complex, if there's one thing they can always need more of, it's parking. That place is a nightmare, especially come fall time when you have the Phillies playing, hopefully losing in October, and you have, you know, the Flyers starting up, and you have the Eagles playing. God forbid they all have a home game the same day. That is absolutely a nightmare. So I'm glad to see that it's going to be raised up. The renderings of the arena look really awesome. I hope that it's not just an artist rendering and that, you know, this is what it's really going to look like, because it looks like a beautiful stadium. 3,500 seats. I think that's a good number. I feel like because a city-based esport league hasn't really come to full fruition yet, with Overwatch League doing it in Season 3, we don't know what the demand is going to be like in the cities when teams have home games. And you know, CWL isn't out yet, so there's a lot of question marks. And I feel like while this is a great move, not every organization is going to be able to do this. They don't have the power that Comcast has, you know, behind the Philadelphia Fusion. I don't see, the London Spitfire. Granted, they're owned by Cloud9. I don't see them making this kind of move. I don't see, you know, the Washington Justice, which is owned by, Mark Ein, a private citizen, really, funding it himself. I don't see them building a massive arena like this. I see more organizations leasing kind of these buildings until they can see what that demand is, until they can see, you know, hey, is our city really going to embrace this? And then and only then could I really justify a lot of these organizations. I feel like a lot of these organizations would be able to justify building a dedicated esport arena like a Fusion Arena. But hey, if you're Comcast and you have stupid money, by all means, do it. Prove everyone wrong. I want to be proven wrong. Philly is only, what, a three-hour drive for us? I would probably drive to Philadelphia just to check it out for the experience. It's a quick day trip. I think the idea is great. I want to know, is this going to be done before season three? I really don't think it will be with how elaborate it looks and the ideas behind it. We're less than a year away from season three. It takes longer to build a stadium, you know, a 3,500-seat stadium. It, you know, you need more than a year. It'll be interesting.
Unless you have stupid money.
Unless you have stupid money. You're absolutely right. But the other thing, too, 3,500 is a decent size arena. What else are you going to be able to do in this arena at that level? You know, here in Washington, D.C., we have the ESA that was recently built by Events D.C., and that's like a 4,000, 4,500-seat arena, and they
right
have and they have a, what was it? The NBA's developmental league. It's
the G League.
The G League. The Capital Go-Go play there. And they have other events. They have some concerts that can play in smaller venues there. It's a, you know, generally when you get that small, it's an outdoor arena. Where here, it's all indoors also. So I'm kind of curious, what else can they use this arena for? How is the seating bowl going to be set up? There's so many question marks I have here for this, but the idea, I like it. I really do. And I applaud Comcast for flexing on everyone and dropping 50 mil to do this. I feel like this is going to be a make or break moment in esports. Can city-based esports really afford a move like this, get a return on their investment, and really have the city take hold? So, I'm excited about it, in all honesty.
Yeah, and I think it's doable as well. Like you said, with the Rays platform, parking is not going to be as big of an issue. At the same point, John, you can also hold concerts here. That's another really good venue for that. It's not going to be like your Maroon 5 or your concerts that can fill up something like the Capital One Arena, but you can bring those smaller, something like a 930 club for us DC fans here, into something like this. I feel like it could work well for a venue like that. At the same point, my biggest issue with it is the fact they are branding it very heavily for the Fusion. I understand it with this being a Philadelphia Fusion arena. But at the same point, if you're branding it so heavily in that way, do you see other teams using the space? And I think that's one of the issues I have. If they're going to buy a Call of Duty team, I don't see it being the Philadelphia Fusion as well. I think they'll have to have some other name to it. So I am curious to see how that does flex into this with different teams coming to the city of Philadelphia, how that's going to work out. The other thing, John, I'm right there with you on leasing. I think more teams are going to sit back and lease to watch. They don't really want to make a huge $50 million investment. They've already made a huge investment into buying the team slot, as well as the players and the coaches. They want to sit back and see how many fans this will actually draw in, and they probably will lease a venue for season three. I would say almost 80%, if not 90% of teams go that route.
Yeah, you almost be crazy not to go the leasing route. I mean, it's just, you're asking a lot of money and a lot of commitment, not just by the organization, but by the city also, by developing on land. And you know, I mean, you know how much land here costs in the Washington, D.C. area, you let alone in Philadelphia, where there's already a gigantic sports complex built up. You know, it's a massive deal here. So I don't see these organizations that are privately owned, whether they're private or publicly owned, in this case with Comcast, being able to throw that kind of money down to justify a massive arena like this. But, you know, again, kind of exciting if you're an esport fan. Maybe this might draw some people that aren't quite sure on esports. Like, hey, look, let's check out the new arena. There's an event going there. Who knows? I mean, it's, you never know.
Well, and that's the key. I mean, even up when I've been to Philly games at either Citizens Bank Park or Wells Fargo, the fact that all the other stadiums and arenas are right there, it's so hard not to look around. Why not walk into Xfinity Live, hang out, talk about the different sports, talk about esports? And then you could also check out these other stadiums, whether it be from the outside, whether you get a tour of them. And I'm sure they do an open house of some sort for Fusion Arena as well once it's built. So I am very excited to see how all that plays out. But the arena, at least like you said, in renderings, they do look gorgeous. The NBA 2K League has unveiled its full schedule for Season 2. All 21 teams will play 16 regular season games plus 3 tournaments. And the schedule as follows. April 2nd through the 6th, we do have the tip-off. May 9th through the 11th, the turn. June 13th through the 15th, the ticket. July 24th through the 26th, we have playoffs. And August 3rd, we have finals. So really exciting stuff on there, John. I'm really excited to see how all this plays out. This is the NBA 2K League's second season, so they did learn a lot from season one. I'm interested to see how the production value continues to improve going into season two, as well as the marketing. The fact that we can't see NBA teams market with their NBA 2K filiparts or affiliates, I'm curious to see if we continue to see that line blurred at all, or if it is going to stay separate, as well as the production value. How does it increase? How does it improve? How do we pull more people into watching this league?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I do like this format, though. I really do like having these mini tournaments, if you will, throughout the season, with the idea of, hey, you can actually punch a ticket into the playoffs by winning these, you know, these three mid-season, beginning and end-season tournaments. You know, so, you know, take last year's winner, you know, Knicks Gaming, for example. They finished with the worst record in the league, but they won. I know they won at least one, possibly two of these tournaments, and they ended up winning the entire league. So, you know, while their record in regular season play was not that good, they would have never qualified, but they were able to because they won some of these tournaments. So they were able to prove their worth, you know, later on down the road when they made it to, you know, the playoffs and eventually into the finals and win everything. So I do like that aspect of it. Should be exciting to see how this league continues to grow. But the marketing and not being able to use their NBA counterparts' social media is really upsetting. And I feel like is the biggest thing holding the NBA 2K League back from really blowing up big time.
And I do have to correct you there. They did not finish all the way down. They finished in 14th.
14th out of what?
Out of 17.
Thank you. Pardon me. Yeah. They were almost rock bottom.
They were. They were almost rock bottom. But like you said, they did do well in the tournaments. They didn't quite end up rock bottom, and they were able to find their way into these tournaments and run the table. So they did very well, and the team stuck together for the most part. A lot of players returning for this next season. What else do we have on the slate? Oh, yes, we talked about it a lot last week, but the EMLS Cup is this weekend at PAX East. Again, the winner and the runner-up in that tournament will go on to represent the U.S. national team in the, I can't remember the name of the event, but it's going to be a FIFA international event, I believe the second weekend in April.
League of Nations. I don't know. This is what I came up with.
League of Nations.
It sounds,
a little
cool.
Superhero-y to me.
It does. It also sounds like a really bad World War II video game. I'm not sure.
U.S. FIFA team. Let's see if we can find it.
Is this double check?
I don't remember the exact name of it. And it is not going to be easy to find. Do you have the article on hand?
I do not.
Well, guys, it is going to be an international FIFA competition. So, again, the winner and runner-up of the EMLS Cup this weekend at PAX East will move on. PAX East happening in Boston. So, exciting stuff there. Hopefully, our man Renato from DC United does well.
And we're not
hopefully
biased.
He moves on to represent the U.S. national team.
We're totally not biased at all. Hopefully Renato does well. I mean, he's been doing incredibly well so far through the first two EMLS stages. Just finished just outside the top four both occasions, but, you know, solid and consistent. That's better than most of the EMLS players from the results between the first and second tournaments happen. So hopefully he gets over that hump, hopefully gets in that top four, and he can compete for the EMLS title. And then, who knows, go on to represent the U.S. Soccer Federation. That'd be kind of cool.
That's the way I'm hoping it falls down. But again, we'll have to tune in for PAX East in that tournament happening this weekend. In other news, we have Vici Gaming being crowned the champion of Dream League Season 11 for Dota. We have them taking down Virtus Pro 3-2 in the finals, with Fnatic being your third place team, losing 2-1 to Virtus Pro in the lower bracket. First prize goes to, Vici Gaming, taking home $350,000, 172 Virtus Pro, and Fnatic rounding out third with 100K. John, not too bad of a purse string for about a two-week tournament.
Not too shabby. Pretty cool results here. You know, Fnatic finishing third place, that's, you know, 100K is nothing to, like, sniff at. But yeah, that's a pretty decent-sized prize pool for a fairly short tournament, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, good stuff there. And that's one of those things, John. I feel like Dota, no matter if it does, if it brings in viewers, if it doesn't bring in viewers, it is always there with prize pool money. Again, the international always being the highest paid esport event throughout the year, but all of their minor tournaments moving up toward the international as well continue to pay pretty good prizes. And then on top of that, with Dota 2 happening, we also had Overwatch League happening this past weekend, and we did have playoff results. Can you break those down for us for Stage 1?
Yeah, real quick. Tuesday, March 21st, the Stage 1 playoffs occurred with Seoul Dynasty defeating New York Excelsior, you know, that same New York Excelsior that kind of struggled to do everything in the Stage playoffs and really in the, you know, postseason playoffs as well. Seoul Dynasty taking that 3-1, huge upset there. Vancouver Titans flexing on the rest of the league, 3-0 the Boston Uprising. Moving on to the next day on Friday, the Reign lost to the Fusion 3-1, and the Shock blanked the Toronto Defiant 3-0. Moving into the semifinals on Saturday, March 23rd, the Vancouver Titans 4-0'd the Seoul Dynasty, and the Shock said, anything you can do, I can do exactly the same, because they 4-0'd the Philadelphia Fusion, with the Stage 1 finals being the Shock versus the Titans. Really, really cool here. An expansion team, the Vancouver Titans, with a solid roster. I had a lot of people excited going into Season 2. The San Francisco Shock finally living up to their potential. Our boy Rascal, who was on the Spitfire last year, traded to the Fuel, was dropped, signed by NRG Esports for their Contenders team for the Shock, made his way all the way back to the Shock for the beginning of this season. Him and Sonata and all the other great players on the Shock get to the finals. Take it the distance, all seven games, 4-3, Vancouver wins. It was really exciting. Vancouver, that was really the first time they showed really in any kind of blood in Overwatch League in Stage 1. They really dominated Stage 1, and I believe, I saw it somewhere, so I can't tell you which article it was, but let me double-check their standings here. Yes, they are the first team in Overwatch League to have a perfect stage. So that's pretty big.
No.
Who?
So perfect stage was also had by Boston Uprising last year and the New York Excelsior this year as well. Unless you're including playoffs. If you're including playoffs, then yes, I think they are the first one to run everything.
Yeah, including playoffs.
Including playoffs.
Yeah, let me pull the article up here. Not important. Anywho, they lose. They run the entire stage. They win the championship, the Vancouver Titans, so that is pretty cool for them as well. Stage 2 starting up in just a few weeks.
Yeah, I feel like the most shocking thing about the result here was the fact that the San Francisco Shock took them 2-7 games. I mean, this Vancouver team dominating straight throughout the stage, like you said, coming into this final matchup, they really had not been drawn blood much at all. But in this one, San Francisco taking them the full distance, going all those seven games, Vancouver still ending up on top. But the fact that the Shock put up that much of a fight, I think, is huge. It shows that the Titans are vulnerable. Yes, they did come out with a win, but they also dropped three games. So I think that should give some of these other teams hopes going into Stage 2.
And how great is it that the final didn't occur on Saturday?
That is beautiful.
That is massive. They extended it to Sunday. They gave them a day off. They only had to play one match. I think that's the right way to go. And we got a great series out of it because of it, 4-3.
Yeah, I think that extra day of rest is huge. A lot of teams complained about it last year because one team in particular had to be up on stage for, they quoted like 5 to 7 hours or something around that range. The fact that one team was able to come off stage right after that, both teams were able to get plenty of rest in, I think that is a huge difference maker. And like you said, John, 3-4 in this final, it really showed that both teams were well rested and ready to go. And with that, we are ready to move as well. We're going to head on over to the LEC to recap this week in League of Legends.
Yeah, so LEC had an off week this week in preparation for their playoffs this week. Joey, last week, I believe, to no one's surprise, you picked Fnatic to run the table in the playoffs for the LEC, picking them as your champion. I just decided to wait until this week to do it. Joey, after much debate, after much deliberation, after much meditation, I unfortunately am going to have to agree with you. I do think Fnatic's going to take it. They have looked incredibly well. They've been running the table nonstop. All the momentum is in their favor. I feel like any team here, I think G2 can't give them a run for their money. But I think the way Fnatic is playing and G2 has been sputtering a little bit the past couple of weeks, unless they figure things out this off week, I really don't see anyone stopping Fnatic in the LEC.
Yeah, I'm honestly not that worried about G2. I'm actually a little bit more worried about SK and OG. Both of those teams seem to have played better against Fnatic throughout the split. Vitality, though, is a huge wild card, and Fnatic does have them in round one. If Vitality is playing on all cylinders, they can really surprise teams. We saw it at Worlds. We saw it in the LEC or formerly EULCS last year. So Fnatic coming up against Vitality should be a good game. What are your thoughts on this series? What is your final score?
Catch me mid-beverage? How dare you?
I can't see. You've been freezing for half the episode. So right now, it looks like you have this really cheesy grin on your face. No beverage in the photo.
Well, according to the little mini stream I have on mine, I'm not frozen, so no funny looks on stream. So which one we're doing? We're doing Fnatic Vitality?
Yeah, Fnatic Vitality. Who are you seeing
best
coming out?
Five?
This is a best of five. Yep.
I'm going to say 3-1 Fnatic.
I have 3-1 Fnatic as well. What about SK Splice?
I think SK can take it. I'm going to say this one goes the distance. I'm going to say 3-2 SK.
Ooh. I don't know who I'm taking out of this one, but I do think it goes the full series. Splice was hot at the end, so I am going to go Splice, but SK is definitely not a team to sleep on. They are the team that scares me the most out of these teams. But again, Splice was hot at the end, so I will ride Splice on 3-2. Sweet. With that, let's head on over to the LCS. Let's break down our final standings. We have Team Liquid in first at 14-4, Cloud9 at 14-4 in second.
Tiebreaker
goes
to
Team
Liquid.
Has a tiebreaker? Yeah. Okay. TSM in third at 13-5, FlyQuest 10-9 in that fourth place spot, Golden Guardians at 9-10 with fifth, Echo Fox at 8-10 with your sixth spot. So that rounds out your playoffs. Going through the rest of the teams, we do have CounterLogic Gaming and Optic Gaming finishing in seventh at 7-11, falling out of that playoff spot. Clutch Gaming at 5-13 in ninth, and 100 Thieves, the team a lot of people expected to be the second overall team to split. They ended up 4-14 in 10th place. Ouch.
That's almost as bad as Cloud9 starting their entire academy team and beating Clutch Gaming. But Clutch was still one win better, so it's not as bad.
Yeah, you keep defending them like that. it was bad. I mean, they spent so much money on imports. They brought Bang over. They were really expecting big things here, and this was going to be their improvement from their poor showing at Worlds. Not only did they go from a poor showing at Worlds, they now had a very, very poor showing in the LCS. So things not looking too good for 100 Thieves this week, or this split. TSM and Echo Fox are going to kick us off in quarterfinals for the LCS. Who are you taking in that one?
Oh, I'm not even surprised Echo Fox is here. Really, Echo Fox benefited from playing teams that have already made it. So I'm going to say TSM takes this. I'm really not sold on Echo Fox at all. I think TSM takes it 3-1, and that might be generous.
I don't think that's generous, actually, because I'm actually flirting with a 3-0, unless you mean generous to Echo Fox.
It's just generous to Echo Fox is what I meant. I really don't think they're going to take one, but I'm going to give them benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I could easily see TSM going 3-0 here. I'm going to go 3-1 as well to give Echo Fox the benefit of the doubt as well. I think they could pull one game. They are a talented team, and they seem to find a win here and there every once in a while. So I'll give them one, but TSM comes out pretty clean 3-1. FlyQuest and Golden Guardians.
So I am leaning towards FlyQuest, but my heart is with Golden Guardians because Hanser is a great top laner, big fan of him. And Contracts is still on Golden Guardians, formerly of Cloud9. Still think he has a lot of potential. I really want to give it to Golden Guardians. I really do. I feel like this one has the potential to go all five games as well. I feel like this is really a toss-up between these two teams. But unfortunately, I've been more impressed with the play style and just the overall evolution this split with FlyQuest. Then Golden Guardians, I'm going to have to give FlyQuest the advantage 3-2, but I would not surprise me one bit if Golden Guardians takes it.
And much to the dismay of chat, I have to agree, John. I think this is 3-2 FlyQuest in favor of FlyQuest, obviously. Golden Guardians looking really good at the end of the split, but again, they're falling just short for me. FlyQuest has looked just slightly better. I really do think this goes the distance. I think we see a really tight game five, and I could see it falling either way. I do think it slightly falls more in the favor of FlyQuest, though, but I would not be surprised if Golden Guardians comes out of this. And with that, that will wrap us up. The winners, again, will play Team Liquid and Cloud9, depending who comes out of these seedings. But overall, we have an exciting week of playoffs ahead. LEC, LCS, I am ready. Lego.
Lego. Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you'll get exclusive access to content that nobody else in the world can get, unless you're a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to reach us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to reach out to us and this show?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. You can also find us streaming on the regular on Twitch, twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And Joey, as always,
level up.